Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. The program emanates from that lovely city. This is broadcast number 654, June the 18th, 1984. In the news to update a year ago, because I keep saying the year goes so quickly, in the news today is very similar and continuous with what we were talking about a year ago. We'll begin immediately with some of the discussions on broadcast 602. That was June the 20th, 1983. I was talking about the militant right, the Posse Comitatus, the origins of Posse Comitatus with their links to their hero, Senator Joe McCarthy, going back to Colonel Charles Willoughby and General Douglas MacArthur in the Philippines, and referred to a book, Hitler Directs His War, another interesting book that I read last year about the Counterintelligence Corps and how the United States Army, within hours of the end of the war, by May the 5th, 1948, had hired people such as Dr. Morell, Hitler's doctor, Hitler's sister Paula, and the group around Adolf Hitler to come to work for the Americans. That was May the 5th. The war was officially over by May the 8th, and they were already working for the United States government. There's another interesting book, The Conservative Decade, that I read last year, and it has the background of William Buckley and his activities in Chicago after he left jail, his forming the magazine National Review, becoming publisher of that, and its national, international links to Vienna and Zurich, London, and links to the John Birch Society and the White Citizens Council, and the very far right wing in the United States. This became the chic, the so-called conservative middle, but it had its tentacles into strong conservative Nazi traditional people who did not dislike the fascism in Europe and were really sorry that we had to ally ourselves in order to survive with the Soviet Union. And then in 1960, William Buckley formed the YAF. And I did quite a bit on that before I wrote the Rebel article in November. This was in June when I was talking about the fascist links to William Buckley and Young Americans for Freedom. I also shared information on Robert Byron Watson's affidavits he gave the House Select Committee on controversial Larry McDonald, apropos of the Western Goals lawsuit that a new one was filed just recently against Western Goals, but the Los Angeles Police Department was tangled with Western Goals, and that was Larry McDonald's baby. He was chairman of Western Goals and also president of the John Birch Society, which has to do with the National Review and the YAF. So that the links of the fascist right, and this is the very fascist right with people like John Singlaub and so forth, and Nazis from the Galen Organization, goes back to the time period during and just after World War II and up to the present. And these people are in the news right now. Larry McDonald's airplane crash ended his demise, but the experience, his life, pardon me, but his experience of being downed by the Soviet Union, which we'll go into in the second half of this broadcast, will always be etched in American history as the cruel Russians shooting the innocent 269 passengers down. The big lie that Hitler talks about will be perpetuated constantly in reference to that flight and many other things, such as trying to link Lee Harvey Oswald with the Marxists continuously when he's linked to the military intelligence, Navy intelligence, and the FBI and the United States government. I'm not going to update or do new material on the attempt to kill the Pope until next week or the week after. It's a toss-up because there's so many vital stories. Yesterday's Washington Post and San Jose Mercury had an article about the new trial that's opening up that the investigators in Italy have uncovered a mass of what they call largely circumstantial evidence. They have a 77-page report on the conspiracy to kill the Pope, but the excuse for wanting him dead was that he was funding Solidarity, which he did give a big hunk of money to, $100 million. But the excuse for killing him was because of the unrest in Poland. It had more to do with the scandals in the Vatican and what was going on, if you read what was surrounding him and John Paul I, who was murdered, and how hard Paul Marcinkus and the Vatican treasurer and the secretary and all of them were working to keep the lid on the Vatican banking financial scandals as well as the murders surrounding the scandals. Pope John Paul I did not die. Of course he didn't. John Paul II, pardon me, did not die. He's very much alive. But they've spent 2 years and 25,000 pages now collecting what they call circumstantial evidence taken from primarily from Aja, who they admit obtained from publicly available sources, telephone books, and so forth, the very information about the Bulgarian Sea implicated, such as their addresses and so forth. Now, it's very important to NBC and to the CIA and Vernon Walters, and we'll do more on that later, that they squash the idea that our Central Intelligence Agency would want to kill John Paul II. That shooting was in May, and Ronald Reagan was shot at in March by the same forces and the same people exactly. In the trial of John DeLorean, the excuse or the defense of John DeLorean is Timothy Hoffman, the drug dealer, is such a sleazy character, who would believe him? Even though John DeLorean, of his own will, free will, and accord, is photographed with narcotics in hotel rooms meeting those sleazy people, when he's prosecuted, you say, well, you wouldn't trust a guy like Timothy Hoffman who ran out and didn't pay his full rent or belonged to the drug trafficking. But when it comes to creating a two-year plot to kill the Pope, if you could try to etch it or link it to KGB people and divert it from the Nazis and the werewolves and the CIA, the primary witness is Mehmet Aja, who killed a reporter, publisher in Turkey, who was freed by the right-wing faction, who worked with the Nazis and CIA werewolves, who worked with Frank Turpel, who was a drug dealer. He was a drug dealer, a killer, a Nazi, working with Nazi traitors and the CIA. So they would want you to believe that he's a credible witness for this trial in Italy and that Timothy Hoffman isn't a credible witness in California. I'm not going to say too much on the Watergate anniversary. This is the 12th anniversary of the break-in of the Watergate Hotel. I just want to update a few items on it. I could do 1 or 2 hours on what has happened with many of these people since the Watergate entry. I heard on CNN a week ago Saturday, there was a program on arms dealers and Samuel Cummings and supplying the arms for various countries around the world. And quickly in passing, they mentioned that former Attorney General John Mitchell and former Vice President Spiro Agnew have some kind of a company where they manufacture uniforms and sell to the Iraq Army. It went so quickly that I have to see if they'll send for a summary of that broadcast. Also this past week, the judge stopped the release of the Nixon papers. You can't get the transcripts of the conversations through the Freedom of Information Act. They are protecting Nixon. They want to resurrect him. They either have to bury him or resurrect him because he knows too much to keep silent, and he keeps popping up. He's just the Phoenix program wasn't meant for the people in Southeast Asia. I think it was the title for the government officials who keep reappearing and appearing, like Herman Apps or John McCloy. Or it used to be Leon Jaworski. The only thing that stops them from popping up is when they're actually dead. But if they're alive, they're always in the media. They're media freaks, and the media plays up to them. So they will not allow you to hear any more scatological and dirty words or incriminating evidence. So Nixon is home free anyway. He can't be charged for any crimes, but he's pretty filthy mouthed and pretty sneaky. So the government is protecting him while the media plays up his image. They shouldn't have him on anything until they hear the tapes to see what kind of a person they're talking to. But I'm talking about an ideal world, not the practical world. We have a private school over in Pebble Beach, Robert Louis Stevenson, and they had a graduation just a week ago, and President Gerald Ford spoke at the graduation. The Monterey Herald described, they were so proud, they said they noted that this was the first time a president or former president had spoken at a commencement at the school, but he has some friends at the school and friends of President Ford live in the area. Well, 50% of Pebble Beach is owned by Marvin Davis, and Gerald Ford's on the board of 20th Century Fox, so that's no mystery. The school's on his property. He owns the price, you know, head of the corporation that owns the property, along with Henry Kissinger and the other characters I talk about. But the problem that I see here is that they bring in these characters that are not elected president. He was appointed by a crook who refused to face his impeachment hearings because he knew he was wrong down the line and would be impeached and maybe even sent to jail. He appoints the man that he put, same man that he put on the Warren Commission to hide the killing of a president of the United States. It's a crime to cover up an investigation, and he should have been put in jail for the cover-up, Gerald Ford, and for leaking things to Henry Luce and Time magazine there were outright lies about Lee Harvey Oswald. But instead of that, he is brought in, not only appointed by Nixon to be on the Warren Commission, but he's appointed as the new president. They push Carl Albert out of the way. The Constitution stands for nothing. The man that should be vice president is just pushed down somewhere like a squash. You never see him or hear about him. And in comes the great Gerry Ford, who then has the distinction of being president. I'm not worried about our generation or my generation, but the young people graduating from school who look starry-eyed and say, President Ford was at our graduation, and don't even know what a scumbag he is. The young people don't have a chance to analyze the public figures, to see who they are, and to know whether they like them or don't like them. They're told they're great, they're wonderful. And so Ford is out here on the peninsula at a graduation. I wish the students at Robert Louis Stevenson could get a little more insight into what's going on in the world. On the anniversary of Watergate, I got a letter from Paul Krasner. He said there's an article coming out in People magazine, June the 11th, on 40 reporters on the 60 activists, and he was supposed to get a full page. Well, June 11th has come and gone, and he didn't get a full page, and he said, at last my parents will be proud. That does make you wonder if his parents have to see him in People magazine to be proud. Then in the Running Press magazine, I guess, or journal, I've never seen it, they're going to have an anthology of the satire from the realists, but he didn't give them sections of Martha Mitchell. They were going to put some serious pieces, but he says Martha Mitchell will not undergo the cutting knife. That means the best article he ever printed in The Realist will not be printed. He doesn't ask me if I mind them putting sections. He just says, I don't want to do that, but St. Martin's Press is going to print his autobiography, and there's going to be an entire chapter on the Watergate. And he asked me the reaction I had, what it felt like for me back in 1972. He said it would help to have a, from different points of view, if you have time and inclination to type out a few paragraphs on what it felt like to you back in 72, I'd certainly appreciate it. And then there was more personal business in the letter. Well, it's 12 years from now, and I'll just give you a few sentences of what I answered to Paul Krasner. I said, Dear Paul, it's kind of sad that thinking a full-page picture of you and People will make your parents happy or even proud. My aged parents, 94 and 90 years old, would feel I did something wrong to be in the company of Luce's publications. They're not so politically astute, but they think that was weird. It's 12 years since we met. At the time, I was trying to explain to you about Nixon and the Nazi connections of how Nixon came to power. Chile was one of Nixon's masterpieces, and together they gather and continue their pledges to the Fourth Reich. You have to admire the loyalty of the right. Sections of Martha Mitchell could and should be wherever realist or underground press is remembered. They'll let you print funny things, but when comedians get political, whether it's Lenny Bruce or you or Mort Saul or anyone else, down comes the axe. What did it feel like in 1972? Whatever adventure you had in publishing any of my three articles, starting with the Martha Mitchell Watergate story, I really don't believe that you appreciated what you were publishing or the meaning of these stories. These three stories told it all, from Reinhard Gehlen's World War II to the excuse for repressive laws today for FBI, Operation Chaos, COINTELPROGRAM, the phony terrorist SLA, CIA. There isn't a thing that has happened in the past 12 years that has negated anything you published in those 3 years, the Watergate story, the Senate cover-up, or the terrorist and the American terrorism formed SLA, CIA. I could tell you what I felt then, the excitement of coming upon serious truths with you and the realization that you were getting great articles. That was your momentary high, easily replaced with drugs, LSD, marijuana. You and your gang copped out and you fell out. Whatever you had then, you lost it as far as I'm concerned. Loyalty and friendship went out the window, and whatever was going on a social political basis, in your mind, it was so thin that people like you allowed the Reagan Mace Kissinger crowd to take over. I don't mean him alone, but he just stopped all political activities except a few silly articles that were allowed to be printed. I said, all you have to do is realize that I never stopped trying to understand this society and to explain it to people. And you have to see the titles of the weekly programs for the past 13 years to know there was a continuous link, and I didn't stop and pick up 12 years later. Didn't we have fun in 1972 doing the Watergate? Tell me how good it was. The time was right, I suppose, to meet you when we did and to share getting those issues out. It serves no purpose now to write about the past because what followed was so hollow. Going over the past is fun for me and meaningful only with those people who have traveled the same road all along the way. As I say, I don't jump, leapfrog into history. Some friends, you have a memory of a certain thing and you go back and remember it. But the political problems that we're talking about, the assassinations, the oppressions, the Cold War, the torture, the tiger cages, the death squads, that has been continuous. And those people that think they can pick up and leave off because they write a letter, it has no meaning for me, and I don't want to be in their anthologies or books. I'd rather write a book about what they were doing in the interim. They wake up like Rip Van Winkle and want to begin life wondering where the middle section was, and that's not for me. Now, some quick items on current deaths and Ronald Reagan's meat, and then we'll go on to the Korean Airlines. The article on that champion horse swell was interesting. I don't read too many sports pages. I read the front pages. But here he's at the height of his career. Swell's victory in the Belmont brought him to the peak of a checkered career. Then they wonder why he runs so well and drops dead. No heart attack. Cause of death won't be known for 2-3 weeks. Doesn't this remind you of all the other deaths we see? We know there's no conspiracy. We know there's no hoax. But we won't tell you what it was for 3 weeks. Asked if there was any chance of foul play, they said if it was done extremely subtly. We never may find out what killed Swale. The news analysts and reporters have the same shtick that they've done with the Belushis and the Lennons and all these other people. We may never really know. Well, in Lennon's case, they blamed Mark David Chapman because they saw him, or Catherine Smith with the heroin and the cocaine for Belushi. But for the most part, the descriptions of deaths of people is so vague that we will never know. The similarity, of course, is the height of victory. He died of, like, the Otis Redding disease, or he was in a plane. Jim Croce was in a plane. Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Mama Cass, you name them. We may never know where it was an overdose, these mysterious things, but all of them had a common denominator, whether it's Elvis Presley or any of them. They were at the height of their career, and they were doing very well. There was no reason to drug out, there was no reason to suicide or anything like that. But they've gotten so used to write the obituaries on the people that they can do the same story on the animal, and I had to mention it because it sounds just identical to the other shtick we get in the news. A friend from New York sent me a copy of the New York Post on David Kennedy's death. There are a lot of small articles updating this, not much in the news that is new, except that the Post mentioned that he had rented a car down in Florida for the spring vacation, and he took this car, and the Post learned that the back window of the rented car in Palm Beach that he had during Easter was smashed in, and that there were bullet holes in the back of the window. The window was either shattered by a bullet or the blow with a blunt instrument, perhaps a hammer. And they also said, further adding to the mystery, the sources said two men were in the car, and neither was David Kennedy. So they, of course, would link it to a drug purchase or a drug arrest, not an arrest, a purchase of drugs or conflict. But how many people going out in Palm Beach during Easter week in order to get a hit where it's all over the streets have a bullet hole in the window and two people driving your car and they don't have their own car or transportation, which they obviously had, and broken window or whatever. But these little pieces are just scattered around, and like the German woman that was going to leave the country and so forth, you just pick them up and try to figure out what it all means. You know it means something, but it takes a lot more, and the people that should be looking into it aren't doing it. An interesting death in Egypt this last week, June the 6th, Prime Minister Fuad Mohiddin, Mohiddin. He died of a heart attack a few minutes after he went to his office in Cairo. He's a doctor, and he's also the prime minister of Egypt. The thing that caught my eye was that they had a very controversial election in Egypt where one of the top officials was murdered. The main opponent against Mubarak had been killed. This was a big challenge to Mubarak's career, and one of the people that was running in that election had been killed. Just simultaneously with the elections, like the eve of the primary, when Robert Kennedy wins the nomination for the Democratic Party, he dies on the eve of the primary. There was one death, one murder in Egypt at the time these elections took place last week. They were at the end of May. And the week after the election, Mr. Mohyeddin died of a heart attack. His successor is the reason the article, well, one of the reasons it caught my eye, the government named Kamal Hassan Ali, the deputy prime minister, to become now the acting prime minister. During Mohyeddin's life, he formed the cabinet for Mr. Mubarak after Sadat was murdered. But if you go back to the broadcast, I did number 515 and 514. Those are October the 11th and October 18th. In 1981, 3 years ago, I was talking about the murder of Sadat, how Mr. Mubarak was at the home of George Bush October the 4th, and Sadat was dead October the 6th. And I also mentioned these people who have moved up into office, not only him, but Kamal Hossein Ali, the foreign minister. He was the one who was working with Thomas Kleins of the CIA, associate of Edwin Wilson, of course, and Frank Turple and George Bush from the Task Force 157 group. They were setting up a arms shipment after the Camp David agreement. Sadat made a deal with Israel, and in return, they were to receive billions of dollars of weapons for Sadat. The Camp David Accord was signed in March of 79, and an office was signed. A contract was signed with a company called Tersim in April of 79. It was a little-known company with no experience in shipping. It was a dummy front out of Geneva set up with the Egyptian front man from Washington, D.C., run by Thomas Kleins of the CIA. The Washington man was Husan Salem. And one of the people who pushed the arrangement, the middleman between the CIA and the Egyptian arrangement for the money, which didn't go to Sadat, went to the PLO, to Sadat's enemies, making way for Mubarak. It went to Kamal Hassan Ali. He was the foreign minister who pushed the arrangement that the CIA and Thomas Kleins, the former head covert deputy chief, would be arranging the shipment of these millions of dollars. The offices were set up in Geneva in June of 79, and Mubarak's brother-in-law, General Sabet, was one of the people. So the exclusive shipment of weapons was done with the CIA and with the new prime minister who just took over. He was instrumental in working with our CIA and getting the weapons to the PLO. And that's a good way to do it. If the Jews in America or the Congress don't want to send money to the PLO, you let the CIA set up the office in Geneva. Then instead of it going to Sadat, it goes to the PLO. It's in the paper. It's very easy. And if you follow it, you see the pattern of how they get their weapons and how we bypass the wishes of the Congress or country like Israel. October 13, 1982, Jack Anderson had a story on that Egyptian-American transport and service company, EATSCO, and that's the same company with CIA officer, the official Thomas Kleins, and with Egyptian defense minister then and head of the intelligence, Kamal Hassan Ali. He was head of the intelligence then. He's now the prime minister. The other one dropped dead 1 week after the elections, and he was the one that was saying the CIA and the Pentagon and the Egyptian government would work through the CIA in handling the weapons to Egypt, which then, as I say, were diverted so that they didn't get into the hands of Sadat and his friends, but they were diverted to PLO. A good hunk of them, or a share of them. So the CIA is doing their business there. Well, on the surface, there's a peace accord. They're sending money to the enemies of Begin over there, and Sadat and that group have the money transferred from the CIA, and that's sort of the appeasement of the PLO, I guess, to sign the Camp David Accord. So you sign a thing, a piece of paper, which is already negated and dead 3 years later, and the PLO is getting weapons. Now, I have been very conscious of meat and meat poisoning and animal and beef. I don't tell you what to eat, but I haven't eaten it in 6 years. And the Los Angeles Herald had an article last week on the steroids in meat. And you can write to Representative James Howard, Democrat of New Jersey. He's co-sponsoring with 36 other members of Congress a bill to create a commission to look in every aspect of farm animal products, the chemicals and the drugs that go into the animals. Now, the animals get testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, anabolic steroids such as Zerenol. The side effects include weight gain, fluid retention, onset of diabetes, aggressiveness, elevated blood fats, early onset of puberty. The thing that I'm worried about when they say aggressiveness is they recognize then that it alters behavior. And I believe that if you think of the meat factories that we have giving a certain age group and the poverty level people, certainly more than anybody else, this constant beef, and what you're getting out of the masses who are really oppressed and don't get a fair shake is not anger or aggressiveness, but lethargy, disproportionate to the times. Think of Jack of the Box and Wendy's and McDonald's and the Sizzler and all the different hamburger places there are where you get quick, fast food. The Big Boy, and you could name about 20 of them quickly, where you get beef. But the interesting part about this article that wasn't limited to a scientific magazine is this. It said, for the past 25 years, Ronald Reagan has his own butcher who supplies his specially organically fed meat. He gets calves, and they're raised on the ranch. They buy these calves, raise them on the ranch, and he has a gentleman do the butchering, and the meat is served to the Secret Service. They pick up the meat. But he's been doing this not since he was president to protect him, but for 25 years since 1959. And that's when the chemicals and the CIA began their warfare against the people in America full scale. And 1959 is when you begin to get the escalation of weird diseases just like now. It's the Alzheimer's or the AIDS. I believe that there are diseases that are prevalent everywhere now that began in this time period in 1959. So we not only have the chemical addition to the meat, but and the proliferation of so many meat places and young people eating this meat, but the President of the United States doesn't touch it. Nancy doesn't say, Ronnie, go down and get that meat. And so he's protected. He knows something we don't know. I myself don't eat it and haven't, and I prefer not to, and I feel better when I see that also. Now, Edwin Meese's name was in the news just quickly on NBC. Connie Chong said Sunday that he got a subpoena to show up at the Marvin Pancoast trial for the murder of Vicki Morgan. There's a new book coming out. It's called Bloomy. The author is Sheldon Davis. He was a long, long friend of Alfred Bloomingdale's. There's an excerpt of it in Globe, June the 5th. It tells about Bloomingdale's $500,000 a year habit with prostitutes, $250,000 annually for Vicki. How he used 45 countries of his own diners club to fix up women all over the country, his need for mass sex, for sex slavery, his hermaphrodites, his arrangements for his women. This is an interesting little tidbit of a book, Bloomy, coming out just at the time of elections for a man who's on the president's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board and Nancy and Ronnie's best friend. Also, Time magazine has a story, A Mistress's Life and Death. You might get a copy if you don't have it of the page, May 21st, 1984, page 41. There's an article about Vicki Morgan and Marvin Pancoast and how when the Los Angeles Police Department got the report when he went in and said he killed her with, and he confessed right away, but he claimed somebody else did it. And they took that quick confession without a lawyer or anybody. And he's been in mental hospitals and could be programmed to confess it because there's no evidence he did it. Time says the prosecution's case against Pancoast is far from ironclad. Beyond his now repudiated confession, there is no hard evidence that he killed her. There's a strong motive has not been established except the fact that she had tapes of the president's cabinet and the president's high government officials. But at the scene of the crime, they recovered no fingerprints from the baseball bat that Marvin Pancoast had, nor did the district attorney's office interview any material witness at the time. The deputy district attorney, Stanley Weisberg, lamely said, we had more cases, other cases more important than that. The LAPD talked to Kathy Smith after John Belushi was dead, told her to get out of town and hadn't pressed charges. These are friends and people are involved with the Reagan administration and close to the Reagan administration in actual murders of people from a movie or comedy or close friends that they've used through the years. It mentions presidential counselor Edwin Meese, who is among Morgan's friends, and filmed, these movies were filmed, Mr. Barron says, of them. And they've subpoenaed him finally. The judge didn't want to turn it into a sex trial, but the attorney for Marvin Pancoast wants to show there was a motive to kill Vicki Morgan and Marvin Mitchelson, who was the original attorney until Reagan called him to the White House and ordered him to not handle the case anymore, and I did tapes on that. He insists that the White House aides confirmed over a year ago there were such tapes. So we'll take a one-minute break. This updates some of the murders that I want to keep track of, so there's so many. And murder by chemical meat or mind manipulation by meat poisoning and steroids. And it's in poultry, too. Lamb, veal, it's not just cow. And the pig, of course. We'll take 1 minute break, and we'll be back to continue on the next side of, half of this broadcast, the next side of the tape on the Korean Airlines.